Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a loaded Friday, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Very good mood today. I've really got my facial hair figured out. Took me a while to get that mustache off my face. I've really got things going on. Joy, how are you?
I'm great. It's Friday. Looking forward to the weekend. It's been an incredible week of stories.
It has been.
Next week, it's like full-on draft mode for the next 2 weeks.
I know. So we have an epidemic in America. People see what they want to see. There's this green fuzzy thing over a ship in San Diego. UFO. No, it's not. It's been debunked already. No, it's not. It's a plane through a fuzzy lens. Looks like a pyramid. It's not. Planes have lights on the nose, the wings. It's a plane moving at plane speed. People see what they want to see. UFO people see what they want to see. We all see what we want to see. People want to see Mac Jones as Tom Brady. Tom Brady's got one of the best cold weather arms in the history of the league. He's one of the most accurate throwers. He was drafted by a Major League Baseball team. He's a much better athlete. Mac Jones is not even the same galaxy as Tom Brady. Tom's bigger with a better arm. So finally, San Francisco's coming to their senses. The 49ers are coming to their senses. Albert Breer, who I trust. Benjamin Albright today comes out. San Francisco, lot of buzz. Niners, Justin Fields. Mike Silver, a guy I trust. 49ers, Justin Fields. People see what they want to see. There's been already a Justin Fields myth debunked this week. That he always throws to the first read. That he's not somehow capable, smart enough, cognitively can't go to a second read. Been totally debunked. Because blogs don't check on anything. Nobody checks on anything. It's a post-truth society. Just throw crap out there, it sticks. Mac Jones, we've suddenly elevated him to, oh, he is so cagey. I hear this a lot. He is so smart. His judgment is unprecedented. Really, there's five quarterback prospects in the first round. He's the only one with a DUI. And he's a smart one. First year away from his parents. All five of these quarterbacks left their parents. Only one got a DUI. Mac Jones. Doesn't mean he's a horrible human. We all make mistakes. Josh Allen had at Buffalo had a really bad tweet. He was like 15. Goofy kid. Kids make mistakes. But you can't keep selling me on how great Mac Jones's judgment is. And he's the one with a DUI. And you can't keep selling me on Justin Fields. Cognitively, totally debunked. You know, it's people see what they want to see. You can have the same story. A conservative sees it one way, a liberal sees it the other. It's the same story. I mean, Johnny Manziel came out. Cleveland Browns had lousy people in their front office, low self-esteem sports franchise, and they fell for Johnny Manziel's cockiness. They saw confidence. It's what they wanted to see. They wanted to see confidence. Bill Belichick took Johnny Manziel off his draft board. Andy Reid, off our draft board. The good coach, Sean Payton, off draft board. You know, the good coaches saw cocky and immature. The Browns, who have low self-esteem and had a bunch of knuckleheads in the front office, saw confident. I said on the air, you can't draft Johnny Manziel. He's going to be a massive bust. People see. Say it out loud with Mac Jones. I got nothing against the kid. Say it out loud. He's the least athletic first-round quarterback. That's not arguable. With the lowest ceiling, and he's got a DUI in college. And that's number three pick in the draft. Folks, those are three red flags. Not athletic, low ceiling, DUI. I'm not saying the kid can't succeed in the NFL. But give me a break. Everybody sees what they want to see with these guys. We're making crap up with Justin Fields. The other thing is, we have to acknowledge that Alabama players often don't perform at the NFL level. Why? And they used to say this about Tom Osborne, the legendary coach at Nebraska, that Osborne and Nick Saban are such good coaches at the college level that the kids they have peak. They peak in college. They don't have another gear. Now, Julio Jones was great in college, great in the NFL. I'm not saying they don't have, I mean, good God, they got so many players drafted, some hit. But a lot of Bama guys are busts, semi-busts, or just really average. Because Nick Saban is so great, he squeezes everything out of them. This is what they said with Tom Osborne. Nebraska dominated college football. None of their guys were good pros. Because Osborne, he squeezed everything out. And I could name five coaches in college who can recruit and can't coach, and it's just the opposite. There's a lot of guys that come college to pro, they're better pros. I can name the coaches that NFL GMs tell me they can recruit, they can't coach. Saban recruits and coaches and squeezes everything out of them. So, I mean, Henry Ruggs, wide receiver Alabama last year. Dude can't run a route, just fast. You know, D. Milner couldn't play. Nothing against the guy. Couldn't play. Nick hit him. But thanks to good reporting, we're seeing some of this nonsense go away. Justin Fields, I believe, should be the second quarterback taken. It looks like now San Francisco third. But this narrative that was out there that, you know, cognitively, I'm a little concerned he doesn't throw to anybody other than the primary, basically saying that's the simplest read. You come out of the huddle, you know where you're throwing, you roll right, you throw it, boom. Oh, wait, PFF graded throws past the first read last 2 years of college football. Justin Fields is number one. Mac Jones is last of all the first-round quarterbacks. People see what they want to see. Politically, sports, UFOs, you see what you want to see. Say it out loud. Lowest graded quarterback on throws outside of the first read. Max last. Athletic last. DUI. He's got it. I root for all these guys. But some of this stuff is nonsense. Now I don't want to be complainer guy. So I want to find a solution to this Aaron Rodgers Packers thing because I'm tired of talking about it. I'm honestly over it. Like, it's off season. So Jordy Nelson, great receiver, played with him, then I think Raiders later, was on the Pat McAfee show, and he said, I just don't get this not pay Aaron Rodgers, don't take care of Aaron Rodgers, don't make him happy. Here's Jordy Nelson.
I don't know what they're doing. I can't answer any of those questions. It's mind-blowing sometimes, especially, I mean, when he comes out and has an MVP year, and if they don't want to commit or do whatever they want to do to, I mean, I don't know, show appreciation or whatever it is for him the next 2 years. Seems like it'd be a pretty easy and simple move that I would say 100%, if not 99.9% of people would agree with.
Okay, so I don't want to complain about this. Aaron is highly compensated. He's the number one cap hit in the NFL. It is Russell Wilson's like up there, number two, three. It is harder to win championships. You can win games because Russell and Aaron are so athletic, so great. You're going to win a bunch of games with them, but it's hard to win a championship when you watch Mahomes and Brady have all-star teams because Mahomes just restructured his deal and Brady restructures his deal. But all this is solvable. Here's a solution. Aaron gets the Jeopardy job, and I'm dead serious. Gives him $15 million a year. You can go to Green Bay. It's like a shoe deal. Hey, I'll take a little cut. I think Aaron would probably be willing to do that. First of all, Jeopardy should hire Aaron Rodgers. He's good at it, and he's a celebrity. Nothing against Ken Jennings and all these other Jeopardy heads, but those guys, they're not going to add any audience to Jeopardy. The people who watch it will watch it with Ken Jennings. And you can pay Ken Jennings $7 million a year. Aaron's going to bring in a guy like me who occasionally watches Jeopardy. I'd watch it more with Aaron Rodgers. There's no question. I would stop the TV. You know, we all fish around on the TV. I'd watch Aaron Rodgers. He would get you casual eyeballs. And Aaron's got leverage because he's got this other job he's good at called Packer quarterback. So Aaron would make about $12 to $15 million a year. I talked to an agent last night. That's what he would make. Ken Jennings makes $7-8. Aaron would make double that because he's going to give your audience a little boost. And he's a celebrity. It's almost like, you know, The Rock. Why is Rock the highest paid actor? It's not just because he's a great thespian. He's got his own audience from wrestling. He brings people in. And Jeopardy for Aaron Rodgers would be a little like Giselle for Tom or a shoe deal for an NBA player. It's ancillary income. If Aaron's making 15 large in the summer in 43 days of work, Aaron may be like, okay, I'll restructure my deal. Aaron doesn't have any kids. Aaron's got nothing but time. He's got a girlfriend or a fiance now, but Aaron's got a lot of time compared to Tom Brady, compared to, you know, once you get married, once you have kids, there's a lot of stuff to do. Aaron is single. He's a private jetter. He is engaged, but there's a difference between engaged and five kids. Aaron's got time. It's 43 days. He can make $15 million. There's your solution. So the reality with this is you can fight. You see this all the time, where Fox has done this historically. Michael Strahan works for this network, and he works for that network. Why? Because you can't get Michael Strahan if you limit his options. Michael Strahan's going to do other stuff. The talented people in this business have second, third, and fourth jobs. Sometimes other networks. Why? They leave. There's too many Hulus and too many Netflix and too many iHearts and too many Fox and too many WWEs, and you want to keep your best people? You better not be rigid, because they'll just move on. Now you can have your own network here and your own network there. And I read a story this morning, some guy's making $400,000 a year on Cameo. I mean, so the bottom line is, you want to make Aaron happy? Give him the Jeopardy job. Make 15 large, and I think Aaron would probably go, all right, let's sit down. We can restructure a little bit. Give me a little signing bonus. Aaron's a smart guy. He wants J.J. Watt. He wants to keep his center. He wants to keep those Aaron Joneses. So there's a solution to this whole thing. It really is, and I don't think it's crazy. I think the world we live in now, Michael Strahan can do Good Morning America and Sunday. It's called private jets. You can do it. You can figure it out. There's people all over the country working second and third jobs. I said, well, I'm off at noon. I don't go to bed till 10. I may just go and, I'd be just do a second show. I mean, just go do Jeopardy. Go make $15 million. Solve it. It's your Giselle. It's your shoe deal for Nike. In a weird sort of way.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I grew up in the Pacific Northwest, and my best friend in college was a guy named Dean Braun. He eventually transferred from the school we were at to the University of Washington. Dean has done very, very well for himself. He has been my broker for 30 years. I trust him implicitly. We talk often, and he has worked his tail off and done very well for himself, because in the Pacific Northwest for 30 years, he's done very well with the Microsoft employees. And if you want financial questions, he's terrific. He told me a story years ago about, you know, these Microsoft guys were geniuses. Like, they were leaving Harvard, and they were leaving Harvard to go make millions. Bill Gates, Paul Allen, Steve Ballmer. These were geniuses, smartest guys in the country, top half of half of half of half of 1%. And they'd all made their money 70s, 80s, early 90s. And there was this kid named Jeff Bezos, who runs Amazon. And he was starting a little company called Amazon. And the Microsoft guys had so much excess money, they were investing in a lot of these companies. And the Microsoft guys, geniuses in America. Microsoft was really at the forefront of all this stuff with Apple. And they met with Bezos. And Dean told me the story. The Microsoft guys, the guys were worth $150 million at 33 years old, all came back and said, we can't keep up with Bezos. That's the smartest person we've ever met. That's why Jeff Bezos is the richest guy in the country. It's not that he came up with a good idea. He's literally brilliant. Reed Hastings at Netflix has crushed traditional television. He's brilliant. Masters at Stanford. Theo Epstein doesn't know more baseball. He went to Yale, and he broke both the Cubs and the Red Sox curse. I've met a lot of baseball guys. Nobody's as smart as Theo Epstein. Raw intelligence almost always wins. It can be quirky. It can be condescending. It can be haughty. It can be above you, but it wins. The two smartest college football coaches, and I've met most of them I've ever met, it is no coincidence. It's Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. And I've talked to both. I've talked to Urban a lot. Folks, both of those guys have gone on TV and done analyst work without really any practice and have been brilliant day one. They're really smart. There's a story today that Trevor Lawrence and Urban Meyer by Dan Wetzel may not work. Trevor Lawrence is chill, not defined by football, and Urban Meyer's is a maniac. And he is, by the way. Urban Meyer would lose 20 pounds coaching at Florida, working himself to death. He used to have to write notes saying, eat three meals a day. He would text recruits during church. He admits it. He once scheduled post-game victory dinners, and he would often miss them. He's a maniac, but he's also brilliant, and he succeeds at everything he touches, and so is Nick Saban. The smartest basketball guy I've ever met, Steve Kerr. I covered him in Portland. He was brilliant as a player and as a broadcaster and as a coach. Jeff Bezos, Reed Hastings, Theo Epstein. Urban's going to succeed because he's smart. That's why he's going to succeed. Now, I'm not saying he's Belichick. I'm not saying he's Andy Reid. He was never a fan of NFL football. He told me. He goes, I don't even watch football. But he's a quick learner, and he'll figure it out. And he'll get worked his first year or two. He'll get worked by some NFL guys. But I always have a rule when I hire people in radio or TV. I just hire smart. I'll teach you the rest of it. You can have 30 years in radio. If you're a mouth breather, I can't do anything with you. There's nothing I can do with you. Bill Belichick, mother spoke seven languages, and his dad wrote the book on scouting. Bill's not perfect. He's just smarter than everybody else. I'm sorry. Football coaches come in two shapes and sizes. Smart guy, tough guy. Sean McVay's really smart. Dan Campbell's really tough. You're going to break your kneecaps. Take the smart guy. I don't know if Urban Meyer will be a home run, but if Trevor Lawrence is healthy, no college coach that I can think of has a greater chance to succeed because he just figures stuff out quite fast. I've seen a million college football coaches and players do college football games. Nobody figured it out faster than Saban and Urban Meyer, the two best college coaches I've ever seen. And by the way, I don't think you have to have perfect personality matches. Michael Jordan punched a teammate. He was coached by the Zen master. Okay, Tony Dungy, Peyton Manning, Bruce Arians, cocktails at five, Tom Brady. Ideally, you'd like to have kind of a Breeze, Sean Payton relentlessness. But the bottom line is Doug Collins was relentless, and so was Michael, and they didn't get along. It didn't work. Not that they didn't get along. They actually did get along, but it just didn't work as well as Phil Jackson, the Zen master. So my take on this whole thing with Urban Meyer and Nick Saban, when in doubt, Dan Wetzel has a very interesting column. You should read it. It's excellent. When in doubt, I just go, how smart are they? And if the answer is really, I'm going to check the box of I think it mostly works.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So as you know, I bring general managers of NFL teams on the show a lot. A lot of my sources are general managers, scouting directors, blah, blah, blah. Is I've always said if I didn't do this for a living, joy is my witness, I would want to be a general manager in the NFL. I love the draft. I like building stuff. I like the architecture of it. Of course, I wouldn't succeed. Like a GM probably wouldn't succeed as a talk show host. I probably picked the right career, but I love it. Everybody's got a second job they would do. You know, some people want to be, actors or they want to be screenwriters. I picked the right job, but this would be my second job. And so I'm fascinated by it. I ask a lot of questions. I love talking to general managers, and they make fun of me because they think I'm obsessed by it. Every time I do a mock draft, they all are like, just stay to a sports host. You're not going to be a general manager. You're crazy. But the point being is I love it. So I talk about a lot of guys. Mickey Loomis of the Saints, I think, is unbelievable. Brandon Bean of Buffalo, Chris Ballard. These are the guys I talk about over and over and over. Well, NFL.com studied all their picks last decade, and they have their top five. So their top five are the guys we love, which is Chris Ballard's number one, Kevin Colbert, Steelers, Jason Light of the Bucks, Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, Buffalo, and Mickey Loomis. These are the guys I constantly bring up. I just think some guys are just great at this draft thing, and they are great. Then let's go to the bottom of it. John Gruden is, of the ones rated, was right near the bottom. Ryan Pace, who I've been critical of, Howie Roseman, Dave Gettleman, the guys I've been critical of, but John Gruden's interesting. So the problem for John Gruden is he made two huge trades early. Amari Cooper, he got a bunch of first-round picks, and Khalil Mack got a bunch of first-round picks. He inherited those players, and we went, whoa! He didn't hit on all those picks. In fact, he hit on one. So he gets all those picks for Amari Cooper and Khalil Mack. Five, four are meh. One's a bust, maybe two, and one, Josh Jacobs, running back, has been great. Three of those five picks have been complete head-scratchers. Henry Ruggs, I didn't like him, didn't get it. He's fast, nothing else. And John Gruden can be an eight-year-old at a toy store. The faster, the flashier it is. Mommy, I want that. You ever seen those made-for-television products? The ShamWow, the OxyClean, the knife that cuts through a coin, the Snuggie? I mean, nobody has ever sat, had a blanket, and thought, you know what this thing is missing? Arms. You've never in your life taken the change out of your pocket and thought, I'd love to cut it in half. But Gruden is one of those guys that feels like, to me, he sits at home and would order that stuff. He falls in love with stuff. You cannot fall in love with college players. You have to fall in like with them. That's why John Gruden is a very, very emotional guy. That's what makes him great. That's why we love John. He emotes. He's great. He's funny. That's why he's a great television personality and why I think he's a really good coach. He can't do personnel. You got to get him out of personnel. It's not what he does. He loved Johnny Manziel. Of course he did. Because Johnny Manziel was different and flashy and talkative and cocky. It's right up John's alley. And of course he loved Henry Ruggs because he's a burner. He's a track guy. He runs 100 miles an hour. And so when you start looking at these guys, this is why most coaches, including Belichick, should stay away from personnel. When I talk to Chris Ballard, when I talk to Tom Telesco, when I talk to these guys and a couple others that would remain anonymous, Brett Veach, Kansas City, these guys are just, it's like, honestly, like being a chef, you're just looking for fresh produce. They don't get emotional about it. Chris Ballard talks me off the ledge. It's just like they're accountants. They're like, this is what he does well. This is what he doesn't do well. I like this. I never hear love. I hear like. I never hear love. Oh, I love this guy. They like him. But they know they're human. And they're 22 years old. And they can get hurt. Gruden falls in love with everything. And so you start looking at the goods and the bads. And, you know, it is interesting because what they do is they give you the best pick the guy's ever made and the worst pick. And even the best guys have whiffed. But it is funny. This is inexact science. So Jason Light of the Buccaneers, he drafted a guy I loved out of college. Because I'm a recruiting dork. He took Vernon Hargraves, the third, a corner from Florida. He was the best corner in high school. He's the best corner in college. I loved him. It didn't work. So it's an inexact science. Some guys don't love the game. They like what the game can do for them. Some guys get hurt. Some guys just, you know, they just don't. You talk to Aqib Talib, and he's ready to fight you over a loose football. Some guys, yeah, you got it. I'll get the next one. So, you know, you can't. The best of the best whiff. Bill Polian's a Hall of Famer. Told me one time he drafted a guard. Two practices in, he turned and apologized to the coach. He can't play. And Bill's a Hall of Famer. Bill was great. And he's like, yeah, I can't play. Well, my bad. So it happens.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
There's a story out today. A former Jet, I love this bite, by the way. Former Jet Matt Khalil, who's a great USC player, great in the NFL, went to the Jets briefly, end of his career. He said they didn't give Sam Darnold any room to grow. He said everybody oohed and aahed about Zach Wilson at BYU's pro day, rolled left, threw across his body. He goes, I've seen Sam do that a million times. It's funny. There's game tape of Sam doing the exact same thing against players in the NFL for touchdowns, and Zach Wilson does it. We're like, oh, my God, against air. And the Jets have decided to draft Zach Wilson and get rid of Sam, and I wish them both luck. But it is interesting. I've said this. Everybody needs help. Nobody can do it alone. Everybody needs a kingmaker. Everybody needs all these people on these political shows. They were nobodies until they got an MSNBC or the late Roger Ailes. They're kingmaker. Everybody needs a kingmaker. Okay. Sam Darnold has been criminally undercoached. At USC, the coordinator he had got fired, never been a coordinator again or a head coach. Adam Gase fired twice. He now goes to young ascending coaches that people love. Matt Rhule won at Temple and Baylor. He took over grease fires at both. He won at both immediately. Joe Brady's 31. He's the next McVay. He's already getting job offers at 31 years old and interviewing for head jobs. So he will not be criminally undercoached. Doesn't mean he'll be a star. But I want to remember. Let me give an example. Alex Smith. Now, Sam is bigger than Alex, stronger than Alex, and more athletic than Alex Smith. Got a better arm. Alex Smith came into the league. First two coaches, Mike Nolan, Mike Singletary. He was considered a complete bust. Jim Harbaugh came in. Alex Smith went 19-5-1. Then he went to Andy Reid, made a Pro Bowl. Look at Alex Smith's record with his first two coaches. 19-31, completed 57% of his throws and a passer rating of 72. He was a bust. With Harbaugh and Reed, his completion percentage skyrockets. His passer rating skyrockets. His touchdown to interception ratio skyrockets. And he goes 69-31-1. Coaching matters. Alex Smith was done. He was a bust. No, he didn't have competent head coaching. And then he went to Harbaugh and Andy Reid and became a Pro Bowler. Alex Smith, by the way, last year Alex Smith playing on a leg with Ron Rivera was 5-1. Playing on one leg. Because again, he had a real coach who built a real defense and a real running game. So that's all I'm saying with Sam Darnold is you got to give some of these guys, some people, it's one thing having average coaching, Ryan Tannehill. But when you're criminally undercoached, like Alex Smith was for his first 4 or 5 years, or like Sam Darnold, or Ryan Tannehill, you got to give a guy a chance. Nobody does this alone. Nobody, I don't care if you're a talk show host, you're a mayor, you're a dentist, nobody can do it without help. And when your help, actually, Ryan Khalil said, they wouldn't let him ad lib. They wouldn't let Sam ad lib. Play came in, run the play. He's like, if you know Sam, it's not what he is. Go to his game tape against USC, against Texas, against Penn State. Sam's got to be a little loose. He'll make mistakes, but you got to let him move a little. He's like Lamar Jackson. Don't overcoach him. You got to let Lamar move a little. Josh Allen, by the way, Buffalo. You got to let Josh Allen move. That's part of his weaponry. There you go. I know you're such a homer, Listen, what I believe in is what I believe in. As I always say, I often am wrong on an argument, and then sometimes I'm wrong for a year, but I know I'm right. RG3 Luck, Kobe Shaq. There are times I know Sam Darnold can play. Not saying he's going to be great, but you start looking around, the pieces he has, the competency of coaching, he'll be just fine. I mean, I'll give you an example. Jared Goff with Jeff Fisher, Jared Goff with Sean McKay. He was a catastrophe.
I don't know that there is a better example of that.
He was a catastrophe.
Everyone agreed he was a bust.
2 years later, Super Bowl.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
There's a company called 3DQB. John Beck is their motion mechanics instructor. He played in the NFL for 6 years, probably the best football player in the Mountain West Conference in the last 20 years. He owned the conference for 3 years. By the way, 3DQB has had Drew Brees and Matt Stafford and Carson Wentz and Matt Ryan and Eli Manning and Tim Tebow. And now it has Justin Fields, who I just love, and Zach Wilson, who's talented, but I don't know a ton about. And John Beck is now joining us live. All right, let's cut to the chase here. First of all, Justin Fields. What is your favorite quality? Because you just walked off the field from Trey Lance, and you see these guys every day. What is your favorite Justin Fields quality that you think will work in the NFL?
To me, it's when I watch him play in the big games, when I watch him play in the playoffs, the national championship, to make the plays that he does on that stage and to do it in an environment where he's getting knocked around while injured.
Yeah.
That's, to me, the biggest thing that I just say. This is a dude that can play on the big stage and make the big plays. And he showed it especially in those games, which I love that. I love that about him.
By the way, general managers have told me for years in the NFL, they like players from the SEC who were great in the biggest games. It matters because it's the closest thing to the NFL in college football. And you play in Columbus, those feel a little bit like NFL games with 80,000 people in the environment and the TV network. So, you know, you quarterbacked in Washington under the Shanahans and under Kyle. What is Kyle like in quarterbacks? What does Justin do that Kyle Shanahan would like or appreciate?
Kyle wants a quarterback that can process things quickly and be able to deliver balls all over the field. He wants an offense that when it needs to drive the ball down the field, it can. When he needs to drive it in tight windows, it can. When he needs to be able to work off key defenders. And essentially, I have two spots, multiple locations that I have to get the ball to almost within the same timing. Can they put their feet in the ground fast and do that? I think that's why you see, you know, certain quarterbacks really thrive in Kyle's system. It's not all just one way. It's a variety of ways. The athleticism helps. I know most people say, oh, well, he wants a guy that can run. He doesn't need a guy that can run with the football, but he likes having a guy that can get on the edge in the play pass game. That's important to him. And then get him on the edge, sell like we're going keeper, and then put our foot in the ground and attack something downfield fast. I think you saw guys in a system in the past that did a great job of doing that, and he's looking for somebody that can do the same now.
By the way, you work with Justin Herbert, and we liked him here on the show because I worked in the Pacific Northwest, and I watched him play 20 times for Oregon, and I kept saying, I don't get the doubts. He's a four-point biology major. He's a good kid. He's big. Did you know when you were working with him, did you have a sense, oh, Lord, this guy is just different?
He is maybe the most talented thrower I've ever been around. He is just so gifted, so talented. And you're right. He's a student of the game. He has a great work ethic. When you sit down in the meeting room with him, he does all the things right. I had watched Justin play, and I knew he was a top draft pick. But until I got to be around him every day and just see him when he comes out onto the field, I knew any veteran player that was going to be around him, when they got to watch him throw, was just going to say, wow, that is a dude that, like, we can follow. That's a guy that can play in the NFL for sure. So I could never have told anybody, oh, he's going to go out and win Rookie of the Year. I mean, you don't know those things because so much of that is dependent on the team that he goes to, the situation, the guys around him. But he's absolutely one of the most talented throwers, most capable throwers I've ever been around.
Yeah, I said this one time. It's like Thanksgiving and a Nerf ball. The ball, he just, it throws so casually. Like some guys, you can sense their mechanics. Like it's a little uncomfortable. He is just flipping that thing all over the, it's like a seed. He's just flipping it all over the yard. Now, I hear Zach Wilson. People say, oh my God, he's got Aaron Rodgers capability. I hear he can slam dunk at 360. He's an athlete. I hear he's also, he loves chaos. I worry about that. Chaos can be rolling your eyes at a play that's called. Sometimes you get addicted to stuff you're good at. You tell me about Zach Wilson. What do you love? What does he have to work on?
Yeah, I don't understand the chaos part. To me, I think what it is I would use the word, I think he enjoys the challenge of thriving in an environment that requires the quarterback to make those athletic throws, which to some quarterback, that equals chaos. And now I'm out of rhythm. I'm in a position I don't want to be in. I believe that Zach looks at those as I'm prepared for those moments. Let there be that chaos because I believe I've trained myself in a way that's going to allow me to make those difficult throws but make them accurately. I've had the chance to be around him for 3 years since his freshman year, and he's worked his tail off for those 3 years here with us at 3DQB, and that's the purpose behind his training here. So he's super gifted, very, very athletic kid, very twitchy, can make those special throws look easy. I think that's why teams are really high on him. So, of course, like any other rookie, he's going to have to go through a learning curve. He's going to have to adapt to the NFL game, right? But I think he has so many traits and tools. The number one thing that I love most about Zach is his desire to pick himself. Like, he believes in himself. He's just, if he has an opportunity to make that tough throw or that situation is going to be where, hey, can you do it? I love the fact that he always believes, yes, I can. And to me, you have to have that if you're going to thrive. And if he does go to the New York Jets, he absolutely is going to need that to thrive in that environment.
Yeah. By the way, can you always tell when a guy has it or not? I mean, you would never say it publicly if a kid doesn't. But do you have sometimes you come out of these workouts and think, I don't know if he's going to make it. And can you tell instantly that's going to work?
There's absolutely players that when you watch them on the field, you can recognize ability. You can recognize where they can get to. How close is this person to his potential, right? What's his ceiling going to be? You can feel those things. They show up. You can also sense a guy's his drive, his passion for the game, his love of the game, the sense of how much he's going to put into it. Those things you can tell. The difficult part about quarterbacking is the things that we don't know, the uncertainty of the team, the situation, the organization, the coaching staff, the fit. All of those things a quarterback depends on. Drew Brees used to always say this to me when I trained with him. There's no position in sports where the team depends on them like the quarterback. But there's also no position in sports where they depend on their team like the quarterback.
Yeah.
So to me, I've seen guys all the time. They come out, they can put together a great workout, but it's a team sport. They depend on so many things. So for all these guys, Justin, Zach, Kyle, Trey, all of them, so much of the next part of their journey is going to be who picks them, and then what happens after they're picked.
Yeah, Brees had a couple years he struggled when he was highly paid and the O-line wasn't good, and then he restructured his deal and he got a better offensive line, and Drew Brees suddenly ended up in Super Bowls. The reality is the better players up front, the more you can throw it on 3rd and 2 and not 3rd and 9, the better football player you become. John Beckett's called 3D QB, lot of notable clients. Great talking to you for a first time. Love to have you back on, and thank you so much, John.
Yep, you're welcome.